Greetings, everybody. This is Tabitha back for another edition of White Wellness. Today is October 12th, 2020, broadcasting out of New York for the American National Radio Network. That song right there was Lynyrd Skynyrd with Simple Man way back in 1973. So today on Oy Vey Island, it's a kind of a dreary, dark, cold, rainy day. Good day to do a broadcast. So for today's broadcast, I'm going to keep it a little shorter than my huskier two-hour ones. I'm getting some feedback that some of the humans that listen to the broadcast prefer a little bit shorter, kind of easier to digest something a little smaller sometimes. So sometimes it's nice just to fit in these kind of hour-ish ones than the two-plus hours. But anyway, today's topic, I'm going to talk a little bit more about race, like I did in my last broadcast, and I also want to talk about another stolen symbol that is ours, much like the six-pointed star. Many of us know that that is also stolen. The Oy Veys have been using it for themselves for a while. Originally, they used the menorah, but now they use, or the manure, but now they use that six-pointed star, which anyone in the know is familiar that that is a Vedic or an Aryan symbol. One triangle denotes the energy of Shiva, or the male energy, and the other one is for Shakti, or the female energy. And of course, in Judaism, it's all about dark feminine, or what appears to be male energy. Very imbalanced, very weird, very toxic, very Talmudic. But before we get to those subjects about symbolism and race, just wanted to let everyone know that the Hala hoax, or what some people refer to as the Holocaust. Of course, when I hear the phrase Holocaust, I think of Dresden. I think of all the firebombing that the Allies and the Oy Veys did to Germany. I do not think of the mythical, gas vans. But anyway, Facebook is banning, quote, I'm putting the quotes, Holocaust denial content. So basically, Facebook, no surprise there, has decided to ban anything truthful about the Hala hoax, and a lot of people are talking about this. I see it on Facebook. People like, you know, getting their underwear in a bunch over it, kind of redonkulous. So I wrote, when I retweeted this, the Oy Veys promote, quote, anti-Semitism and the Hala hoax when it suits their agenda. Anyone with their panties in a bunch over this doesn't comprehend how this system works. And of course, like we've all talked about, me, Mike, Josh, on broadcasts together, and also individually, this is what they do. They promote what they need to promote, even if it's negative, until they don't promote it, at a certain point they stop. So this is what is going on right now. When I see that BBC News or Jews has decided to cover the story, a lot of outlets are covering it. And they're just saying that they're going to prohibit, quote, any content that denies or distorts the, quote, Holocaust or Hala hoax. So that means anything that differs from their fantasy story is going to be banned. They'll probably even be banning people or possibly doing something else with their account if they do that. I'm no longer on Facebook because I just found it to be too MK'd, too AI, such a waste. But the article goes on to say, Facebook boss Mark Zuckerberg wrote that he had, quote, struggled with the tension, quote, unquote, between free speech and banning such posts, but that, quote, this is the right balance. 2 years ago, Zuckerberg said that such posts should not automatically be taken down for, quote, getting it wrong. He goes on to say, I'm Jewish and there's a set of people who deny the Hala hoax happened. Of course, more people than ever before don't believe in that ridiculous kosher fairy tale, especially younger people, especially people under 30. And a lot of the world that didn't get irritated with all of this redonkulous and vile and horrific MK Ultra abusive psychological psychotic Hala hoax programming or pogramming also don't know this Oy Vey fantasy tale of gas vans, you guys know it, lampshades, soap, sausage, poop diamonds, different puffs of smoke for different Oy Veys. It's absolutely redonkulous. Zuckerberg goes on to say, I find it deeply offensive. Oh, offensive. But at the end of the day, I don't believe that our platform should take that down because I think that there are things that different people get wrong. I don't think that they're intentionally getting it wrong. His remarks led to a large public backlash. But on Monday, and that's today, as Facebook changes its policies, he wrote that he had changed his mind. Or maybe he was told to change his mind. Who knows? I mean, he's a pretty big oy vey, but there are definitely oy veys who are bigger than him. And he's saying that, quote, my own thinking has evolved as I've seen data showing, so AI, an increase in, quote, anti-Semitic violence, and have our wider policies, as have our wider policies on hate speech. And of course, like I said prior, the oy veys will promote anti-Semitism and promote what will be garnered or deemed as, quote, hate speech, because it works for them to a certain extent, because then they can create a dialectic around that, create more diversion, and then instill, more chaos somewhere else. So they'll always do what works for them. That's what people have to understand. Even if it's one oy vey not banning the holo hoax, it'll be something else sometime later when it works for the collective oy vey-ness. So just wanted to say that. Let's see if there's anything else worth mentioning in this article. It said Facebook earlier in the year had banned, quote, hate speech involving harmful stereotypes, including, quote, anti-Semitic content. Of course, I'm adding all these quotes, but holo hoax denial had not yet been banned. And now the vice president of Facebook says the company made the decision alongside the well-documented rise in, quote, anti-Semitism globally, and the alarming rate of ignorance about the holo hoax, especially amongst young people. So that's why they're doing it, because it works for them. And of course, they're fomenting anti-Semitism. And also, when they say, quote, anti-Semitism is on the rise, that means that more people are comprehending what's going on. That's what that means. When they say racism or anti-Semitism is on the rise, that means that more people have their number and understand what's going on. That's that. That's how that works. Pretty simple right there. But they always use words in a way that sometimes when you're new to this, it's difficult to understand what they're saying. Just like when they use the word human when they're talking, they're not talking about anybody but them. That's it. They're not talking about whites, blacks, mestizos, Dravidians, Asians, Middle Easterners. They're talking about themselves, because they don't consider whites and anyone else who falls into, for lack of a better word, a Gentile race. They're not talking about us. They're talking about themselves, which really is top chutzpah when you think about it, because they're the ones that are alien. They're the ones that are other. It's not us. The article concludes by saying the World Jewish Congress, which had conferred with Facebook on anti-Semitism, welcomed the move. And I keep on seeing these little adverts from the WJC on the corner or somewhere whilst I'm scrolling a page, saying something that's supposed to garner you to click on the button, my Jewish future is at stake, or something like that. When the Oyed AI first, the story first broke out, they were howling and saying that, quote, white nationalists and anti-Semites were spreading the virus to Jews and other majorities. Now they're talking about their Jewish future being at stake. And of course, what are they doing? They're howling and bemoaning for shekels, whilst they are the ones who are behind Oyed AI. The article concludes by saying, denying the holo hoax, trivializing it, minimizing it. It is a tool used to spread hatred and false conspiracies about oy veys and other majorities. Well, it's definitely a tool. And it's definitely a tool to spread hatred and false conspiracies. Absolutely. But not about the oy veys and other majorities. Mostly about us, about our race, especially about Germans. So there they are, giving you a half-truth, and then flipping it and putting themselves in it. Oh, poor me, right? Typical oy vey type of thing. The Polish proverb comes to mind, the Jew cries out in pain whilst he strikes you. And of course, the article ends with that vile piece of filth, Jonathan Greenblatt, the chief executive of the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League. He twatted out, this has been years in the making. That guy is terrible. So that is the end of it. He says, this has been years in the making. Having personally engaged with Facebook on the issue, I can attest the ban on Hala hoax denial is a big deal. Glad it finally happened. So, see, they let things happen for a while when it suits their fancy, and then when it doesn't, they decide to get rid of it. And that's how it works, especially since there are a lot of younger people who aren't buying their crud. And since a lot of younger people are still utilizing the Facebook platform, they'll do whatever they can to shape the minds of youth. And this makes me think of this film that I took in last week called The Social Dilemma, which has to do with not just Facebook, but all of these anti-social media platforms, Instagroid, Twitter, ShitTok, all of them. And ShitTok and Instagroid tend to be more popular with the Zoomers, but I think Facebook is possibly still more popular with millennials, and there's also a lot of boomers and stuff utilizing Facebook to get in touch with people. But this Social Dilemma movie, basically, what I got out of it is that if you're utilizing Facebook, and everyone knows now that, I don't know, what was it, 5+ years ago, Facebook changed to basically their format, whether you're on your mobile or on your desktop, they changed it to basically aggregate what they want you to see. So them banning, quote, Holocaust or Hala hoax denial means that they are further curating what they want you to see. That's how it works. So that's all I wanted to say about that right there. Just a little bit of something there. They're always doing something. Oh, here's something else I just see on the sidebar of BBC. Facebook adds, quote, blackface photos to banned posts. So here's something else that's getting banned. Facebook has updated its rules to tackle posts containing depictions of, quote, blackface. And that could really mean literally anything, right? I was the other day when I was broadcasting, I was actually wearing a charcoal mask on my face. I was doing like a detox mask. That would be considered by some tomfools as, quote, blackface, right? So Facebook has updated its rules to tackle posts containing depictions of, quote, blackface and common anti-Semitic stereotypes. So there we go, right? So blackface doesn't apply to oy veys. No, it usually applies to blacks, right? But here they are, you know, with their little other thing of anti-Semitic right up in there, right? Its community standards now explicitly state such content should be removed if used to target or mock people. The company said it consulted more than 60 outside experts before making the move. But one campaigner said she still had concerns about its wider anti-racism efforts. And of course, anti-racism just means anti-white. They're saying it's deeply damaging, blackface. And here's a fun fact. Back in the day when, you know, actors were pretty much predominantly whites and oyves, all the parts of blacks were played by whites. I think of the film Birth of a Nation, old classic film, worth seeing if anyone's a fan of film. I remember seeing this film whilst I was at university. I was taking a film appreciation class, 1915. This is an oldie, over 100 years ago. But all the actors in that film are wearing blackface. They've made such a ridiculous thing out of this, but this is what they do, or this is what they do. They'll always make a big deal out of something if they can use it for an agenda, if it behooves them. They will always, you know, scream and pout and howl if they can use it in some regard for their agenda. So this whole blackface thing comes under quote, hate speech policies. Facebook's rules have long included a ban on, quote, hate speech related to race, ethnicity, and religious affiliation, among other characteristics. But they have now revised it to specify caricatures of black people in the form of blackface and references to Jews running the world or controlling major institutions such as media networks, the economy, or the government. The rules also apply to Instagroid. The policy chief of Facebook says this type of content has always gone against the spirit of our hate speech policies. Well, of course it has, because they want to aggregate what they want you to see. And like I talked about in the broadcast yesterday with Mike, very important broadcast, if you haven't caught that one already, really deep conversation, very philosophical about all the things we're dealing with in our world today. they basically are creating your reality for you, especially if you're getting all your information, your news, or your Jews via these anti-social media platforms, and most of your time is spent inside. And by inside, I don't just mean inside. I mean inside like the computer world. So very much something to think about, especially for the younger generations who a lot of their formative years, and even so now, were spent inside. They didn't have like that outdoor kind of like latchkey culture that a lot of us who are a little bit older have. And I've even noticed that there tends to be very much a discrepancy, even with people who were born, let's say 10 years after me, like people who are born like in 90, who are kind of like, you know, older millennials. Even with that 10-year difference, there seems to be a lot going on, more so than, let's say, someone who was 50 with someone who is 40, me, of course, being 40. I think that there's more continuity with many things with someone who's like, let's say, 50 or 50-ish and someone who's 40 than someone who's 30. That just goes to show you how much the tech, the VR, all of this immersion in this world, which is very fun and enjoyable. You're all utilizing it right now, as am I, for this broadcast, but it's still not the same as the real world. The article goes on to say that they have also, or they said they would also like to apply, this is ridiculous, Facebook said the ban would apply to photos of people portraying Black Pete or Black Peter, the helper of St. Nicholas, who traditionally appears in blackface at winter festivals and in the Netherlands. This is like an old folk thing in parts of Europe, the myth of Black Peter. I remember as a youngster hearing about Black Peter, thinking it was kind of cool, a little spooky. So they're saying that they want to do away with this, of course, because this infringes on our culture, on our traditions. Even if they are, let's say, Christmas traditions, they're still our traditions. They're also saying they might remove some photos of English Morris folk dancers who have painted their faces black. This is really mind-zeeing, really, really mind-zeeing. The tech firm said it had deleted 22.5 million items of, quote, hate speech in the months of April to June. Of course, that was like the peak of Oyed AI, compared to 9.6 million the previous quarter. People know what's going on. It was said the rise was, quote, largely driven by improvements to its auto-detection technologies across several languages, including Spanish, Arabic, Indonesian, and Burmese. Let's hope that all the people who speak those languages are, quote, anti-Semites, right? So they're really looking to erase anything. They're looking to make Jews the eternal victim, which they've already been doing for a long-ass time. They're looking to do the same thing with the majorities, with all the BIPOCs, the boogaloos, the ingrates, and the pieces of crap. They're looking to basically give these people like mini oive victim status. Many of them are completely eating it up, acting just like mini Jews. It's vile. It really is. I would suggest to any person out there who's listening to this, who is not white, but is still like a Gentile, a non-Jew, to not box yourself into any of those ridiculous BIPOC, BLM groups. These things are all run by oives, and they're using you as a proxy for their own agendas. And once they meet their agendas, they'll either discard you or they'll enslave you. So that was that thing about blackface and banned posts, just more kvetching, more oiveying, typical type of stuff. Just wanted to break down the how it works, especially for people who are new. I get the sense that we are picking up some new listeners. Also, I can just tell by the stats. I also know by people who I've been speaking to. I've been turning people on to the broadcast whenever I can. So just really want to make sure I do a good job of breaking everything down so people who are new to this information understand or comprehend what I'm saying. Okay, so now let's shift gears and talk about yet another stolen symbol. Could it be? Could it be that the oives stole another symbol from us? Well, yes, they did. And the symbol that I'm going to be speaking about today is the Hamsa. The Hamsa is that hand that's upside down. This is not an oive symbol. Maybe you guys have seen Madonna wearing this symbol of the Hamsa. There are other people who wear it too. She's been into Jewish Kabbalah for a long time. Of course, Kabbalah is Yet another thing that the Oyves have stolen. Kabbalah, of course, was originally an Aryan thing, but the Oyves have stolen it. They've stolen everything and either appropriated it for their own use or they've inverted it and made us think it's like, you know, evil and terrible, like, quote, Satanism, for example, right? And speaking of Madonna, I saw these extraordinarily bizarre, I guess I would refer to them as grotesque, photos of her. Today, she twatted out that she had voted. Of course, she voted for Biden and the Hindu Dindu. But anyway, oh gosh, she looked just so weird. She didn't even look human. She looked like kind of like a gray or like an alien. And she almost kind of had this look of like a child. It was very, very bizarre. Really, really creepy. If you haven't seen it, you can probably Google a picture of that that tweet and see it for yourself. But she's 62. And of course, it's always good to look good as one gets older. No doubt about that. Always good to look good when you're young, too, or when you're of, middle type of age. I like to use the phrase middle age, because technically 75 would be middle age, because we live to 150. That's at least from what I can understand about the human life expectancy. But there's a big difference between looking good when you're a little bit older and just looking absolutely ridiculous or looking just kind of like a creature. This did not look good. The picture was, granted, she's had a lot of plastic surgery, no doubt about that, but now with all of these filters and, you know, color contacts and makeup, hair dye, you could really be someone totally, totally, totally different. Especially with VR, you can definitely be someone totally different. So here is this piece about the Hamsa, or the Hand of Fatima. Hand of God in Kabbalah, stolen from the East. Well, 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 you don't say. This amulet was stolen out of the ancient East. It's used in Hinduism and Vedicism and later Buddhism when it was created. There is a lot of nonsense claiming what this is in Kabbalah. In Hinduism, which of course originally came from Vedicism, the most important mantra of Kundalini Yoga is that of Shiva and Shakti, which is the Ham, Shiva, and the Sha, Shakti mantra, Hamsa. This is used as part of a prana kriya to open the centers in the brain. However, in Kabbalah, the symbol of the open hand is the crown chakra, and the all-seeing eye is the pineal gland, or as they call this, the eye of God. The full and proper spelling of this mantra in the ancient Hindu or Vedic texts is Haum Sam. That's H-A-U-M-S-A-U-M, Haum Sam. Haum is the Bij mantra of Shiva and placed in the crown as mentioned in the previous article. And Saum is the Bij mantra of Soma, the moon deity and the sixth chakra. The five fingers of the Hamsa hand in Hinduism and Buddhism represent the five elements which come together in the third eye. This amulet stolen from Hinduism or Vedicism is the formula for opening the crown chakra and the third eye and how they interconnect. And of course, the third eye chakra is chakra number 6, and crown chakra is chakra number 7 if you're going about the 7 chakra system. And its name, and it's the name of Shiva and Shakti. It's not even Shitbru or Hebrew. It's Sanskrit. And of course, Sanskrit is our original language, is an Indo-Aryan language. It's the mother tongue of our people. But Shitbru or Hebrew is this kind of like inverted, creepy, weird thing that they also stole facets of Sanskrit from to make up this language. It's kind of like how Yiddish is a version of Shitbru. So you got the Sanskrit in there and German, nothing, and I mean nothing of theirs is original. What else is stolen from Hinduism? What else is stolen from Hinduism in Kabbalah? In Kabbalah, they call the highest god the Ayin, which is the 16th letter in Hebrew and means eye, E-Y-E. And in Kabbalah is simply the term for the all-seeing eye. In Kabbalah, it states when Yahweh states his name is I am what I am, this is Kabbalistic. Ayin, Yahweh is Ayin, A-Y-N. Ayin is the eye of God and the pineal gland in Kabbalah. This is also, oh, you don't say, stolen from Hinduism, from Ain, A-I-N, which is the Bij mantra of the goddess Saraswati. It's Ain, not Aim. It has the symbol of the nasal N sound, not the M in Sanskrit. The AIN mantra, A-I-N, is given for the Shri Yantra, which is the yantra of the moon chakra, the all-seeing eye. The AYIN, A-Y-N, the Y is a double letter with I in Kabbalah, so it's redundant. The number of 130 for the full spelling of AYIN is based on 5 times 26, the five elements and the number of their, quote, God, that of 26. In Kabbalah, which is the pure understanding of the Torah and Judaism, they state their, quote, God is simply the energy of the letters and the all-seeing eye, the chakra point in the head. So I'm not sure if that means the crown chakra or the Talu chakra, and the Talu chakra is one that is not too well known in the seven system, because it's not really part of that seven system, but the Talu chakra is this chakra. I talked about this on a show a long time ago. The Talu chakra is like, I think it's right around that area, like in your head. You know when you're like born and you have your three skull plates and then they finally kind of fuse together, but you kind of still maybe have like a small divot right in the area in the middle? That is where, I think they call it the fontanelle, that is the area where the Talu chakra would be. And note that all the Abrahamic religions, whether it be Christianity, Islam, or Judaism, they all wear that parasite cap that covers the Talu chakra. Very interesting. Which is a concept, go back to the article about the chakra point in the head, which is a concept they stole from the ancient religions such as Hinduism and Egypt. The head god of Egypt, Osiris, was called the Eye, the Ayin. This is the Eye of Shiva in the East. So once again, every single time, every single day, another stolen symbol. Stolen everything, but just very interesting there. I'm sure many people have seen the Hamsa, but didn't know that it was a stolen symbol of the Oyves. It's kind of an interesting symbol. It's pretty. Of course, they steal these symbols not just because they're pretty or they're interesting. They steal these symbols because they're powerful. That's why they steal them. No one should be surprised that they stole the symbol. This is what they do, or this is how they do. So I think I have a little bit more that I wanted to say about the Hamsa. Right here. Yeah, right here, just had a little bit more, like a couple of paragraphs or so from another article. And this one is about Shiva Yoga and the Hamsa. The Hamsa is one of the key concepts in Vedic, yogic, and tantric thought. And Vedicism is the religion that came before Hinduism or Hinduism. That's been very garbled by the Oyves, just like Buddhism or Judaism. Pretty much every religion, even if it's not an Abrahamic religion, if it's not a racial religion, it's been polluted by the Oyves. So that would include Hinduism, Judaism, Sikhism. All of the New Age is pretty much perverted right there. But there's a lot. There's very few that haven't been. And if they haven't been perverted, they've been very much kind of like marginalized, or they just aren't practiced a lot, or the people who were practicing them have been genocided or, you know, abused in some terrible way, because they really want to get all of us out of that racial thinking, especially us whites. The Hamsa is one of the key concepts in Vedic, yogic, and tantric thought. Along with the Kundalini, it holds many secrets of deeper yoga practices. Indeed, without understanding the Hamsa, the Kundalini force cannot likely be properly developed or understood. So another reason the Oyves are possibly fleecing this symbol is because they don't want us to understand the Kundalini. The Hamsa, as a bird, is portrayed in later Sanskrit literature as a swan, which is a symbol for prana and the inner self that is the highest prana, and prana just means energy. The Hamsa in Puranic thought is a vehicle for Lord Brahma, the creator, and his consort Sarasvati Devi as the bringers of knowledge. Yet Hamsa and other meanings has other meanings, and there are many forms of Hamsas back to the Rig Veda, where the Hamsa is primarily a solar symbol, the bird of light. Hamsa also means Shayina, the hawk or falcon that steals the soma and takes it up to the earth to enjoy it in the freedom of the highest heaven. And soma is, it's been debated by a lot of people throughout time, what actually is soma? Is it psilocybin? Is it cannabis? There's a couple of other things people have said it was. Maybe it was a drink like a bong lassi, which was a concoction of cannabis and other things. So it's up for debate what soma was. Soma, of course, is that drug in Brave New World. And there's also a pharmaceutical that's a muscle relaxant that's called soma. And I believe that Gordon Wasson wrote a book called Soma as well. Terence McKenna talks about soma a lot too, and it's still not understood, I think, with full, truth exactly what is soma according to the Vedas. The Hamsa in tantric thought represents the individual soul or jiva, whose life is governed by the breath and all the dualities of body and mind that arise from it. This is because the ha and sa are the natural sounds of breath, like through inhalation and exhalation. Many forms of pranayama, and that should means breathing exercises, follow these sounds accordingly. Yet at a higher level beyond duality, ha and sa are the natural sounds of the self, which is the inner breath of awareness, the unitarity prana that is self-existent and immortal. Ha is the self as I, aham, and sa is the self as that or the inner being. Ham sa also refers to the supreme or paramahamsa, which is the liberated soul that dwells in the state of the supreme Shiva. In this regard, Hamsa teachings are an integral part of Shiva yoga, and Shiva is also Hamsa. Hamsa as sound and prana vibration are also Om or Pranava, of which Lord Shiva is the indicator. Hamsa represents the union of Shiva and Shakti, which are Ha and Sa, sun and moon, prana and apana, the incoming and the outgoing vital energies. All dualities, starting with the breath, are a reflection of the greater two-in-one power of Shiva and Shakti, which get divided in the lower worlds. And look at the divide we have between men and women right now in the lower world, because whether we like it or not, we're living in this lower consciousness. Even if us who listen to this broadcast or other humans out there who aren't necessarily in this lower world in a spiritual sense, when we look outside, it's still the lower world for the most part. In terms of tantric yoga practices, the Hamsa represents the Shiva principle, just as the Kundalini indicates the Shakti principle. Hamsa and Kundalini must unite and move together. It is the Kundalini that carries the Hamsa up the spine. Very interesting. At the same time, it is the Hamsa, or the soul energy, that turns the Kundalini into a force of spiritual aspiration and ascent. As Kundalini is the serpent power, or Shakti of the soul, Hamsa is like the bird, or Shiva Purusha of the soul, whose two wings are prana and mind. Hamsa is the jiva that seeks to fly upward to heaven, the thousand-petal lotus of the head. I remember when the Kundalini rises, the head, supposedly, because that the crown chakra is represented by purple and like this thousand-petal lotus, it opens up and it looks like horns. And that's why some people who don't know what's going on, they say it's like, they like to use that against us and say it's like devil horns and things like that. But the word devil just comes from the Sanskrit word devi, which means goddess, and deva, which means god. That's it. They always like to make it sound like it's so spooky and all this crazy stuff. It's just a Jewish magic trick, essentially. Together, Kundalini and Hamsa are the feathered serpent, or the bird that flies upward holding the serpent. Yet Kundalini is not always a serpent. It is sometimes a bird, the Hamsa itself. Similarly, the Hamsa is not always a bird. Sometimes it is also a serpent. Both serpent and bird indicate electrical and ascending energy. The Hamsa is an extension or expansion of the bindu, or the point focus in its movement and expansion. Yet the nada, or vibratory principles, form its wings. Without this soul awakening, or Hamsa Chaitanya, the quote, consciousness of the Hamsa, one cannot work with Kundalini Shakti in a completely harmonious manner. So another reason why the UAVs would want to steal this, right? So they can kind of hijack that Kundalini awakening, which all of us have this energy laying dormant in our spine, in the base of our spine. If the Kundalini moves without the Hamsa, it is likely to disturb our physical and subtle bodies. Well, sounds like the Oyves are definitely up to something, especially when you pair this Kundalini movement with a malnutritious diet. This is very, very dangerous stuff. And this is the type of stuff that's promoted in these Jew age circles as being like awakened, light bodies, light warriors, transcending, ascending, whatever. It is Shakti without the Shiva. And we live in a fractured world where we don't have that male-female sacred bond. Very important stuff, not just from an exoteric perspective, but also from an esoteric perspective. There's a reason why things exist the way they are, in the real way, not the oy vey way. First, one must awaken the Hamsa in order to effectively awaken the Kundalini. They'll both tend to manifest together. This means to awaken as an individual soul in its perennial pursuit of the Godhead. And in order to awaken as an individual soul in the perennial pursuit of Godhead, that includes becoming racial. That includes having your racial awakening. No matter what a lot of these Jew-agers will tell you out there, racialism is true spirituality. Why do you think that every universal or universalized or juniversal or juniversalized religion coming from the Latin word religare, to reel in, why do you think all of those priests preach against racialism, right? Because that is how you activate your soul. That is how you turn yourself on. That is how you basically turn the switch on, how you electrify everything and how you become yourself. Contrary to everything that they tell you in the Zio media about you being, you know, all these terrible Zio buzzwords they utilize constantly, racist, bigot, neo-Nazi, anti-Semite, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's all crap. It's all crap. It's all crap. It's all fake. It's all inversion, and it's all to harm you and keep you away from having your racial spiritual awakening, which is the same thing. The Hamsa is the jiva, or individual soul, that must take its journey back to the chakras guided by Shakti to realize the supreme Shiva above the thousand-petal lotus of the head. The Hamsa is propelled in its ascending movement by the nada, vibration, bindu, concentration, and the bij, the mantras, and the energies, the lingas, the power of stillness, and the yonis, the powers of receptivity along the way. The Hamsa carries the soma, or the nectar of delight, amrita, ananda, up from the lower chakras to the thousand-petal lotus of the head, where it can release it in a thousand streams. Very interesting stuff right there. And supposedly there are different types of Hamsas. There's the Nila Hamsa, which is dark blue, has the power of electrical energy or lightning, represented by the Bij mantra Krim, K-R-I-M. There's the Suvarna Hamsa, which is golden. It represents the expansive power of the sun and the heart, represented by the Bij mantra Harim, H-R-I-M. There's the Shveta Hamsa, which is a white Hamsa, expansive power of the moon. This is the Soma Hamsa, represented by the Bij mantra of Shrim. And finally, the Rakta Hamsa, which is a red Hamsa, the extending force of fire and Agni, represented by the Bij mantra of Hum. These different types of Hamsas are manifestations of the same Hamsa that is in the soul of all of its manifestations. The supreme Hamsa is the liberty's soul that is all the Hamsas in the form of manifestation. So if the Hamsa, in a way, is the soul, and the Oy Veys are using this for their own thing, their own whatever, their own agendas, their own crud, in a way, they're kind of stealing our soul or our symbol that affects and could liberate our soul. This is like a soul theft. It's kind of like a metaphysical soul theft, if you will. Very important that we know these things. This is not just like some weirdo stuff out there. This is our lineage. Of course, some people aren't going to agree with that based on where they're at in their journey, but this is our lineage. It's extremely important that we know these things, and it's important that we share this with other people. So that's pretty much all I wanted to say about the Hamsa, but just yet another thing that has been stolen. Just thought everyone should know and understand that this is another symbol. So next time you see this symbol when you're out and about, don't think negatively of this symbol. Like, I have to say, when I first used to see the six-pointed star, it used to make me a bit uncomfortable. I used to kind of feel like, oh, what the hell is this? But I think there was some approach avoid going on with it where I kind of knew that it was ours, but I didn't like the context that it was in. But then once I realized that it was our symbol, and I said, oh, this is what's going on there. They're stealing this from us. They're inverting it. They're stealing it. They're doing all the stuff that they normally do. Once I realized that this was ours, I started to feel very differently towards it. So once you have that epiphany or that awakening, and you realize that it's yours, it's your symbol, it's from the lineage of your people, perhaps you'll feel differently about it. Just something I wanted to put out there. Okay, so next I wanted to shift gears and talk a little bit more about race. So I started reading an article last time on the broadcast about some differences between blacks and whites, and I want to continue reading from this list. I'm not going to read the whole list today because it's 100 facts. It's long, but I will read through it in dribs and drabs in different broadcasts. So today I wanted to focus on anthropology, a topic that I find absolutely fascinating. Even before I was, quote, awake or aware, I was always really, really fascinated by anthropology, real anthropology, real stuff, not the Franz Boas or the Ashley Montague stuff, real stuff, like Carlton S. Kuhn, he's one. There are a bunch of real, Carl Linnaeus being someone from way back in the day. These people are now derided in the UAV media as scientific racists or, pushers of scientific racism. This is just a phrase that the Oyves use to give a negative connotation to the truth. Biology is biology. The whole Oyve idea of out of Africa, all of this stuff, it's not true. It's just a fantasy religion. Scientism, make no bones about it. That is a religion. The idea of all these crazy things, like we came from pond scum, we're these little specks in the world, we all came out of Africa, we all descended from apes. Stuff like this is really, really damaging, really toxic, vile, disgusting lies. So I wanted to set the record straight on some of this. I've talked about this before in the past, but like I said, we have a lot of people coming over to the platform, perhaps people who are new to these ideas. Maybe even if you're a seasoned listener of this platform or other people who have podcasts about this type of information, this information might be new to you as well. So I want to talk about anthropology, and I want to talk a little bit about crime statistics. And what I'm going to be reading from today, like I said, the continuation of this 100 facts, this was written in the 90s. So it's about 30 years old. So of course the stuff with the anthropology is going to be spot on because biology doesn't change. And even if people are, let's say, more mixed now, still the actual biology of the non-mixed humans, that doesn't change, right? And of course, the crime stuff, I would propose to say that it's probably even worse than what this was back in the 90s, which is just terrible. And this information about anthropology, if you're new to this, if you're new to thinking about things in a racial perspective, I don't share this information to, deride, dehumanize, or humiliate other people of other races. This is just a way for us to better understand our differences and to make ourselves informed, because you are not going to hear this really most places. I mean, just think about what they've done with the Hala hoax, how they do their best to cover that up, what they're doing in modern current day right now with Oyed AI. They've done a lot in regards to covering up anthropology. Back in the day, like 100 years ago, you could be an anthropologist at a university before it was really a Juniversity, and you could actually study and go in depth and study the different biology between, different types of man, different races or species, if you will. Now you would be totally, smeared all over anti-social media, and you'd probably never work again. So anyway, let's go on and start with fact number 21 in the category of anthropology. The name Homo sapien was first used by the 18th century Swedish botanist Carl Linnaeus. The word, quote, sapien, S-A-P-I-E-N, means wise. The name was originally used to speak of the white man and the synonymous with Europeanus. As a result, Many later taxonomists and geneticists believed that blacks and other races should be classified as different species. And this makes people feel very uncomfortable when they hear this language of different races being species. But just think about this for a second. You could see a bird. There could be five or six birds. They're all gray. Maybe their beak is slightly different. Maybe they have a different feather pattern. No one's got any issue accepting that those birds that look even more similar than the races do, right, are different species. So what's wrong with categorizing different people as different species if it's accurate, right? In fact, Darwin, and he's a suspect individual, might have been an oive, but I'll go on. And he had some oive ideas too. In fact, Darwin declared in The Descent of Man that the varieties of mankind were so distinct that similar differences found in any other animal, here we go, would warrant their classification in different species, if not different genera. So even someone like Darwin is saying that. Fact number 22. For his mammoth work, The Origins of Races, and I think I have this book. This is by Carlton S. Kuhn. He was the president of the American Association of Physical Anthropologists. If you're a fan of anthropology, you might want to go and procure some books by Carlton Kuhn, also going by Carlton S. Kuhn, I believe. Humorous that his last name is Kuhn, and he's studying blacks and other races. It's kind of like an inside joke. But anyway, if anyone's interested in real anthropology, get yourself some Carlton Kuhn books. So he was the president of the American Association of Physical Anthropologists and the premier geneticist of the world. And of course, this was like 100 years ago. He assembled massive evidence from geography, anatomy, genetics, physiology, comparative dentition, that's, you know, dental stuff, right? Linguistics, archaeology, and fossil records from 300 bone-bearing sites to verify his theory of pre-sapien racination. In other words, Homo erectus was divided by race even before evolution into Homo sapien stage. Fact number 23. According to Dr. Kuhn, whilst the Caucasoid subspecies, also known as the white race, and I find that word a bit troublesome, Caucasoid, because that can mean people who are Eurasian as well as Jewish. I like to use the word Europoid, but the older books always use Caucasoid. And the older books, even though they're hardcore and they're straight to the point in regards to Negroids and Mongoloids and, you know, Australoids and all the other races, they really don't go into detail with Jews. So I'm thinking, knowing how Jews do things, they were fine with promoting the truth about everything else, but they were still hiding the truth about themselves within the confines of promoting the truth about other races. So according to Dr. Kuhn, whilst the Caucasoid subspecies, the white race, was evolving in Europe, the black race was standing still on the evolutionary plane and is today no less than 200,000 years behind the European in skull and brain development. Fact number 24, the black skull, in addition to having a smaller brain volume and thicker cranial bones than that of a white, is prognathous, or prognathous. And I've talked about prognatism before on the broadcast, even how the costume, the JWO costume and the mask looks a lot like prognatism, especially when someone is actually wearing a black mask. And isn't that blackface? Oh my God, think about this. There you are in your Oyed AI JWO Talmudic costume and you're wearing a black mask. I see a lot of humans out wearing a black mask. Isn't that blackface? Well, I guess if it's part of the JWO costume, they allow it to slide. So to those of people who don't know, prognatism was when the lower face projects forward, like it juts forward. Sometimes you see this in Mongoloids or Asians as well. You typically see it in the Asian races that are mixed with the Australoid race. The Australoid race is another black race. They're typically known as Aboriginals in Australia. Of course, the Dravidian Indians have Australoid blood as well, so they have that prognatism as well. You will see prognatism with Koreans and Chinese to an extent because they're mixed race people. That's why they usually have disdain for Japanese, because the Japanese are like the Germans or the Aryans of Asia. But that prognatism is a feature that is innate to the Negroid race, when we're talking about the black race right now, or the Australoid race, which is another black race, the Aboriginals. So it juts forward in the manner of an animal's muzzle. In consequence, the black jaw is substantially longer relative to its width than the white jaw. A feature of the black lower jaw is its retention of a vestige of the, quote, simian shelf, the bony region immediately behind the incisors. So think about where the incisors are in the lower jaw. There's a bony region there. The simian shelf is a distinguishing characteristic of apes, and it is absent in whites. Very interesting information. Fact number 25, the skin of blacks is thicker and possibly superior to the whites in a way that it impedes the penetration of germs. And of course, we know what we know about germs and the whole, you know, germ theory and everything. But anyway, I'll keep on reading. And its protection from UV rays or ultraviolet rays of the sun. And this makes me think of something, too, if we're believing the Oyid, the Oyid stories in the Jews media, how they were saying, oh, it was minorities, it was blacks and mestizos and Asians that were getting the virus more than whites. Well, shouldn't what I just read right there about blacks having thicker skin to impede penetration of germs, shouldn't, even if you're using the Oyvind's germ theory, wouldn't that mean that blacks were actually superior in regards to not catching the virus, even though you can't even catch a virus, but whatever, I'll just enjoy the personal joke. Fact number 26, the dark color of blacks is due to melanin pigment, which is spread through every layer of the skin and is found even in the muscles and the brain. And this reminds me of silky chickens. Anyone who's a chicken fan will know that silkies, and they're a bird that's prized in China for making a very strengthening soup if someone is in an ill stead or post-birth. Silkies are birds that have black skin, black muscles, black everything, black flesh. Very interesting. Fact number 27, an African dentist can tell a black person's tooth from a white man's tooth at just a glance. And I did a very fascinating show a while ago about holistic dentistry and racial odontology. Odontology is the study within the confines of racialism when you're talking about people's teeth. I was really into this a long time ago. I actually wanted to get like a degree in like anthropology, especially with concentration in odontology. I was also really fascinated at the time wondering why Jews had such cranial facial malformation and such slack faces. This is what I wanted to study like about, I don't know, 15 years ago, but I don't think I would have been able to study these things. So I've gone on and done my own studies on these things that I'm not at the mercy of any stupid Jew-niversity, especially now post-Oyid. That would really be a shit sandwich situation to be in. But nevertheless, I did a broadcast about a year ago, maybe even longer, when I talked about racial odontology. We all have differences with our teeth, not just with size and the shape of our palate, but we all have differences with our teeth. You know, when you're talking about the three major races, for lack of, you know, better stuff, you know, African, Aryan and Asian, right? AAA, you can tell the teeth look different. The mongoloid or the Asian tooth is supposed to have more of a shovely look. And blacks, especially the teeth that are in the back, like their molars, they have molars that are usually more adept at grinding like more vegetative matter. And they actually also have bacteria within the confines of their stomach where they can take in a higher load of vegetables and do better with it than, let's say, whites or Asians. Interesting, extremely interesting. Fact number 28, blacks have arms which are longer relative to the body height than those of whites. This feature, together with their thicker cranial bones, gives black athletes an advantage over whites in boxing. The skeletal and muscular peculiarities of blacks' lower limbs have given them considerable success as sprinters, but have left them relatively undistinguished as distant runners. And I've also read they have a heel bone that is better for jumping and things like that. So every race, based on their skeletal differences, which we all have, whether it's acknowledged or not in the Jewish media, gives us different proclivities towards different things. Makes total sense, right? Fact number 29, additional differences. And this is just goes through a bunch of highlights, a bunch of lists of things from a physical perspective that are differences. Again, very, very interesting information. The hair of blacks is black, crispy, and almost woolly in texture. It's flat and elliptical with no central canal or duct like the hair of Europeans. So right off the bat, a very different hair, right, for the races. The nose is thick, broad, and flat in blacks. Of 10 turned up nostrils, exposing the red inner lining of the mucous membrane similar to apes. The arms and legs of blacks are relatively shorter than the European. The humerus, which is the bone that's, what is that again? Yeah, the humerus is like the top bone of the arm. The humerus is a bit shorter, and the forearm, the radius and the ulna, is longer, thereby approximating the simian form. The eyes are prominent, iris black, and the orbits large. The eye has a yellow, sometimes sclerotic coat over it, a bit like a gorilla. Blacks have a shorter trunk at the cross section. The black has a shorter trunk. The cross section of the chest is more circular, kind of like a barrel chest, if you will, than whites. The pelvis is narrower and longer in blacks as well. The mouth is typically wider and very thick with large protruding lips. Blacks have a thick, superficial, horny layer on their skin, which resists scratching and impedes, like I said earlier, the penetration of germs. So completely different skin. Blacks have a larger and shorter neck akin to that of anthropoids. The cranial sutures in the skull are more simple than in the white type and close together. There's a little bit of a typo there. The ears of blacks are roundish, rather small, standing somewhat high and detached, thus approaching more of the simian form. The black is more powerfully developed from the pelvis down, and the white is more powerfully developed in the chest area. The jaw is larger and stronger and protrudes outwards, the prognathism, which along with the lower retreating forehead gives the facial angle of 68 to 70, as opposed to Europeans or whites, which have 80 to 82. And I've heard that I think Mongoloids or Asians fit in somewhere in between that. And there also are different angles with the genitals as well. I did a whole broadcast about this, about race and sexuality. There's a reason why it would behoove us not to race mix. I mean, there's a million and one reasons why it's not a good thing to do. But just from kind of like a Cinderella perspective of the shoe fits, if you will, the angles of the genitals of the different races are designed to complement the angle of a black man's vagina, black man's penis, excuse me, is meant to complement a black woman's vagina. The angle of a white man's penis is meant to complement a white woman's vagina. This is just the way it goes. Same with the size and everything else. Asian, same thing. This is just how nature designed all of us. It's actually a wonderful thing, but then we go and we get all violated and discombobulated with all this disgusting Jewish propaganda, and then race mixing is something that's just so deleterious and so destructive. The hands and fingers are proportionately more narrow and longer in blacks. The wrist and ankles are shorter and also more robust. The frontal and parietal bones of the cranium in blacks are less excavated and less capacious. The skull is thicker, especially on the sides. The brains of blacks on average is 9 to 20% smaller than whites. The teeth for blacks are larger and wider apart than in the white race. They also tend to have a much more wide palate. The three curvatures of the spine are less pronounced in blacks and in whites, and thus more characteristic of an ape. The femur of the black is less oblique, the tibia or the shin bone more curved and bent forward, and the calf of the leg high but little developed. The heel is broad and projecting, the foot long and broad but slightly arched, causing flat soles. The great toe or the big toe is shorter than in whites. And finally, the two bones proper of the nose are occasionally united as in apes, and you don't see that in whites. I don't think in Asians either. But then again, like I said prior, there are certain Asian races like Korean and Chinese that have, you know, a bit of the Australoid blood. Dravidians, of course, even though they're considered Asian, they're more Australoid than, say, Koreans or Chinese. And then you have all of Southeast Asia, which is a complete mixed population of like North Asian and more more Australoid blood. And finally, fact number 30 in regards to anthropology in this fact sheet. Blood group studies made during World War II, and of course that's a long time ago, suggest that the American black gene pool is about 28% white. And of course, I would say it's way more now. So all the things I went through on this list so far, all these anthropological characteristics, they would be more prominent in someone who had, obviously, more black blood, right? This despite all manner of institutional discrimination, social segregation, etc. Keep in mind the results of tests from true black Africans would show even bigger differences than whites. And of course, that's why a lot of these things are kind of just getting lost in the ether, because people are way more mixed than they were in the 90s when this first came out. And of course, way more mixed than they were post, WW2. So now a little bit about crime. Crime stats. And of course, this has been a year where there's been a lot of crime. It's been crime on steroids because of this whole BLM thing. And Mike actually made a good point in the broadcast yesterday saying maybe that BLM thing wasn't even about race. Maybe it was just used as like fear porn to get us like off the streets and keep us inside. And they just basically trumped up the whole Floyd case, ran with that, and said it was all about injustice and cop killing and, or cops being killers rather, which, the cop wasn't, all of that stuff, just to use that as a big smokescreen, like a big oy vey smokescreen, when it was really just about getting people off the streets. And then, of course, another plus about that is that they could have their proxy, their primate proxy, basically act nuts and burn and destroy more of the world, which of course is the what the oy veys want. So the very interesting analysis, I thought, when he brought that up yesterday on the broadcast. So here are some facts about crime. And keep in mind, this is like 30 years old, so this could definitely be way worse in statistically speaking now. Fact number 31. The rate at which blacks commit murder is 13 times that of whites, rape and assault 10 times. These figures, as given by the FBI reports, vary somewhat from year to year, but fairly represent the trend for the past decade. Fact number 32. According to the Justice Department, one in every four black males between the age of 20 and 29 is currently in prison or on probation or parole. Fact number 33. Though only 12% of the U.S. population, that was back then, I think they're like 13 plus now maybe, I think they're even more, who knows. Blacks commit more than half of all rapes and robberies and 60% of all murders in the U.S. And I think those stats are definitely higher now because their numbers have been growing and ours have been dwindling. I think ours have been dwindling twice as fast as theirs grow. Fact number 34. Approximately 50% of all black males will be arrested and charged with a serious felony during their lifetime. Fact number 35, a black person is 56 more times likely to attack a white person than vice versa. Fact number 36, black rapists choose white victims over half the time, 54.9%, 30 times as 30 times as often as whites choose blacks. And of course, the rates of white men raping black women is just like, it's almost non-existent. And of course, when it comes to black men raping white women, it's so high. Fact number 37, the annual report from the Department of Justice shows that when whites commit violence, they do it to blacks 2.4% of the time. Blacks, on the other hand, choose white victims more than half of the time, and that's probably higher now too. Fact number 38, in New York City or New York City, any white is over 300 times more likely to be assaulted by a gang of blacks than a black is by a gang of whites. And don't you love how the Jews media says it's a youths attacked, right? A euphemism for young blacks that the Zio media utilizes. Fact number 39. Many people argue that high black incarceration rates show that police center enforcement at black crimes and ignore white collar crimes. However, blacks commit a disproportionate number of white collar crimes offenses as well. In 1990, blacks were nearly three times as likely to be arrested for forgery, counterfeiting, and embezzlement as whites. And fact number 40. Many people believe that crime is a product of poverty and a lack of, quote, advantages. However, The District of Columbia, which enjoys the highest average annual salaries and is only second to Alaska in personal income per capita, leads the nation in just about every category of crime, including murder, robbery, aggravated assault, and vehicle theft. DC, the District of Criminals, as Mike calls it, also has the county's strictest gun control, highest police costs per capita, highest ration of police and correctional officers per citizen, and the highest rate of incarceration. Its permanent population is over 80% Black. In West Virginia, which has the nation's lowest crime rate, suffers from chronic poverty, and has the highest unemployment in the U.S., it also has the fewest police per capita. West Virginia is over 96% white. And remember, those stats are from about 30 years ago, but still nevertheless very interesting. The crime stats, the anthropological stats, stay firm, albeit with mixing, these traits will be less. And now, finally, a little bit about the Black family. So we'll stop at fact 44 and we'll leave the rest for another broadcast. The Black family, and this is terrible what's happened to all families, what the Oyves have done to white families, Black families, mestizo families, but I think especially they've done it to whites, probably did it to Blacks first, and then they did it to whites, but they went after whites in more of a hardcore way because I think they marketed more deleterious stuff to us. But nevertheless, just really, really just sickening what the Oyves have done, and so sickening how they are the ones that took Blacks out of Africa, brought them here, right? Tried to get them to fit in here, and then used them, right? Used them as a proxy. I mean, they use everybody, but it's just, I hate when you hear and see all this crap where people are still talking about whites being responsible for slavery. And it's like, after they say that, they don't even want to hear another stitch of what you have to say, right? But it's not like that. I mean, everyone in the know knows it's not like that. And of course, us whites were slaves before Blacks were even brought over here. We just, you know, escaped from it. We had, the faculties to escape from it. The Oyves probably went to Africa to pluck them out and use them as slaves because it was an easy thing to do. And they probably also knew that not only could they make a good slave, they could utilize them at a later point as a proxy. Despicable. So here are about four facts about Black families. Fact number 41. 46% of inner-city Black men between the age of 16 and 62 were unemployed. Fact number 42, more than 66% of the children of Blacks are born out of wedlock. Per capita, their illegitimacy rate is 10 times that of whites. Fact number 43, Blacks are 4.5 times more likely than whites to be on welfare. And finally, fact number 44, more than 35% of all Black men in U.S. cities are drug or alcohol abusers. And these stats are probably higher now, too, because this was written 30 years ago. So that's it right there for those facts about Blacks and whites. You have reached the end of this little broadcast about the latest kosher news or Jews with the Oyves and the Hala hoax and that crap about blackface, a bit about the Hamsa, which is one of our spiritual racial symbols, and some very thought-provoking information about Blacks regarding anthropology, crime, and the filial unit. So I am your host, Tabitha. You are listening to White Wellness. Thank you very much for listening to this broadcast. Please share it with friends and family. I will be catching everyone soon on the next broadcast, and make sure to listen to all the wonderful broadcasts over here at the one and only American National Radio Network. Sat Nam. Goodbye, everybody.